Hey everyone, there's no time to take a break. There's no delay in between. So we're gonna go right into it. Wonderful to see so many people, Baruch Hashem, in the Beit Midrash here. Nice to see people live and not over a video camera. Thank God. I want to thank Rabbi Chuchiner for inviting me to come, a close friend and a relative. I want to really dedicate this morning. Memory of Malka Bat Chaim Yeshua, Zichrona Livracha, Shana Friedman's mother. Really thank Reb Lazer and Shana for their dedication and their very warm friendship as well. I'll use this opportunity. It was my uncle's yahrzeit. Those of you that knew my uncle, Uncle Hank, who lived just down the block on Blue Forest for, I don't know, about 50 years or so. His yahrzeit was just a few days ago. It also be Le'ilui Nishmato, Avraham Ben Chaim Tzvi. When you're so used to doing something, there's often a tremendous danger. It's referred to as almost the lullaby effect. Like all these lullabies, but if you actually analyze them, they're actually quite scary and traumatic. Like Rockabye Baby and the treetop and things breaking and falling, and how that's supposed to put children to bed, I'm actually not quite sure. Never worked for me personally. But when we're so used to doing things in life, we sometimes require a reset, a restart, and to really analyze something that perhaps we can just, rattle off of our mouths very quickly. We're accustomed to saying it, reciting it, hearing it. So I really want to use today as an opportunity to analyze a perek of Tehillim, analyze a chapter of Tehillim that many of us are quite familiar with. It comes from a court. It comes from Sefer Tehillim. It's Perek of Zion, chapter 27. And it's referred to as the David, and it's recited universally, universally among Ashkenazim and Sephardim twice a day during this time period. There's a machlokas. Shacharis, everyone agrees. Is it recited Mincha, recited at Marv, Chassidim, Sfardim? It doesn't matter. The bottom line is it is recited twice a day. LeDavid, Hashem Urivi Ishi Mimi Ira, God is my light and salvation. And really, we continue reciting this all the way through the end of Sukkot. In Israel, it's Hoshana Rabbah. In Chutzaret, we say it even on Shmini Atzeret. It's a fascinating, fascinating minhag. Just as an aside, it is actually not mentioned anywhere in the Gemara or in the Rishonim. To the best of my knowledge, and I'm not an academic, it first appears in the Siddur of Rav Shabtai of Roscoff in 1788, but apparently there's no way it only started in the 18th century because it's already universal at that time, so therefore it probably goes back a little bit earlier. But definitely probably only comes around during the times of the Achronim. And the Midrash, on Midrash Tehillim, is somewhat of a source to why we recite it, although that is not very clear at all. The Midrash Tehillim says, Le David, Hashem Urivi Ishi, those are the first few words. The Midrash Tehillim says, Uri, Hashem is my light, on Rosh Hashanah. Vishi, my salvation, on Yom Kippur. That is really basically almost the only source. It's an old midrash. It doesn't say we have to say it then. It doesn't mean that we're obligated to recite it then, but somehow that's perhaps one type of source why it specifically is highlighted during this time of the year. What I want to focus on, my friends, I want to see if we can get into the head of David HaMelech and what exactly was he trying to articulate to his readers, to himself. And why is it that the great rabbinic authorities of only, 300 years ago said, you know what? This chapter, this perek of Tehillim, this capital is very worthwhile reciting specifically during this time of the year. So in order to appreciate this paragraph, I'm going to read it. We're going to translate it somewhat slowly. We're going to analyze it and perhaps reach what I hope will be a very meaningful conclusion that maybe at Mincha or at Marv tonight, recite it a little differently than perhaps you have in the past. Okay, here we go. question I want to ask is, what's the tone? What is the tone? I will appreciate responses coming up in a few minutes. I'm going to tell you my thesis, and then I'll have to prove my thesis. My thesis is as follows, that there's essentially almost two different types of tones in this paragraph, of Tehillim, that seem to be almost contradictory. You could almost say there should have been two chapters. However, I think that it was intentional by David HaMelech to actually make them one perek, one chapter, because it actually teaches a very powerful message, specifically, of course, in our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. So let's begin to see those two different components and realize perhaps that it's actually really one larger entity, which two different modes, two different themes that really need to be synthesized into one very powerful idea. Here we go. The first pasuk is, and now, full disclosure, the English translation, I did not want to do any editing, is a copy and paste from Sepharia. I'm not saying it is the best translation. I will, in fact, argue in some of the translations, but I don't want to get too nitpicky in detail, because after all, we have 21 minutes to the second. So here we go. The first pasuk is as follows. David Hashem revi'ishi mimira. Hashem ma'oz chayai mimi'efchad. So right away, generally speaking, the word David, although not always, can and often means that David wrote this parak of Tehillim. That is not always the case in Tehillim. Sometimes the first word, if he had more time, it would develop this a little bit longer. In my opinion, not just my opinion, it's Chazal's opinion, that this was actually compiled by David HaMelech himself. Let's continue. The Tehillim begins with a very powerful message. There's a parallel between light and salvation, right? And what is the translation? Hashem is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Who should I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Whom should I dread? What type of tone, ladies and gentlemen, what type of tone is David HaMelech articulating? What type of tone?
It's a positive, but if Hashem's there, I have nothing to fear.
Very good. There's a sense of confidence, right? I have Hashem. There's absolutely nothing to fear. It's a tremendous sense of confidence because he recognizes in the presence of Hashem. But he's not speaking to God, right? You follow? He's not addressing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's speaking to some type of audience. But there's a sense of confidence. He's speaking about the Ribono Shel Olam. Let's continue. Bikrov alai Miriam. Le'echol et bisari sarai ve'oivayli. When evil men assail me to devour my flesh, it is they, my foes and enemies. Hema kashuv nafalu. They will stumble and they will fall. Hear this? There's this tremendous sense of confidence. And by the way, what might this setting be? Speaking about enemies, look at the next pasuk as well. Clearly, there's going to be something about war. There's going to be some type of battlefield that he's going to make reference to. Which again, what in the world does that do with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, right? That seems to be very strange, right? So, and again, he's utilizing these three types of enemies. There's Mireim, and there's Sarai, and Oivayli, right? Which perhaps connects previously to Ori, Yishi, Moaz Chayai. And these final two words where it says, to stumble and fall, again, are often used, by the way, in Tanakh in terms of war. So I think that's perhaps the war connection. And then the next verse, Im tachana lai machana lo yiralibi. Im takuma lai milchama bezot ani voteach. Should an army besiege me, my heart would have no fear. Should war beset me, still would I be confident. Again, there's this tremendous sense from David HaMelech of this confidence, of this sense of tremendous type of security. And by the way, your enemies are there? Lo yirara, I'm okay. That's almost brazen. It's almost like chutzpahdik, right? The enemies are everywhere, and you're like, I'm totally fine. Almost overly confident in many ways. So much so that when enemies are everywhere, no problem. After all, famous pasuk. the source of many, many songs. Achat sha'alti me'et Hashem ota avakesh. Shifti beveit Hashem kol yemei chayai lachazot benoam Hashem uvaker behei chalo. So in this pasuk, very much stress. Only one thing, achat sha'alti, right? One thing I ask of Hashem. Only that I do seek. And what is it? To live in the house of Hashem all the days of my life. To gaze upon the beauty of the Lord in his temple. So we know that David HaMelech was unable to build the Beit HaMikdash, but there's no question he had a longing towards that goal. And he's so, you know, David HaMelech is so assured of his physical safety. He's so assured because Hashem's presence is so palpable. And what does he say? Yeah, there's a war, but you know what? I'm going to be okay. So I'm going to be able to seek and pursue what I really want to. And what do I really want to do? I have one request. One request. And that is one thing. I want to maintain a level of intense cleaving to God. And it has many components to it. I want to dwell in his house. I want to behold his beauty. I want to mevakir behechalo, right? It has many different components to it. But it ultimately, it is all about this one major theme, one major desire that he has. And what is his tremendous desire? That is, of course, to increase his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Begins with sitting in God's house to gaze at the beauty and really, as translated, I think a little more properly, Vakir Bechelo really means to contemplate his presence, right? Or his teachings. That's what many of the Rishonim understand it. And that's what David HaMelech yearns for. Again, the sense of confidence. Even though there's war and the enemies are surrounding him, he wants to cling to the Ribono Sha'olam. The next pasuk, pasuk hey. Kit b'neni b'suko, b'yom ra'a. From the time of trouble, he shall hide me in his sukkah, which doesn't mean what we build, in some type of, you know, pavilion of some sort, under the cover of his tent, right? He's going to hide him, grant the protection of his tent, and raise me high on a rock. Again, there's the sense of protection from the enemies, there that Hashem is going to provide for him, right? And that he's going to have a sense of rock, a sense of security, and a sense of safety. Next pasuk. Bata yarum roshi alay vayis vivotai vezbecha v'ola zivchei trua ashira v'zamra li Hashem. Now is my head high over my enemies round about. I sacrifice in his tent with shouts of joy, singing, enchanting a hymn to the Lord. And this, by the way, is going to be almost the end of this section. We're ending this section. And what's fascinating is that this conclusion of this section is offering praise to Hashem, right? And where does he want to do this? He wants to do this in this Ohel, which by the way, David HaMelech had this Ohel, had this tent. He didn't have the Beis HaMikdash. And that's its conclusion. So we see here that what is the final word, which is clearly intentional, and that's the name of Hashem. Ashira v'zamra la Hashem. That there's a sense of thanksgiving and praise to Ribono Shel Olam. Okay, fine. That's quickly, that is the first half. What about the second half? A totally different theme. Let's take a look together very quickly. Shema Hashem, koli ekra, v'choneni v'aneni. Now, he turns to Hashem himself. And it's almost as if the people that he was speaking to before, he's almost turning their back on them. He's speaking to Hashem directly. And in this case, there's no confidence at all. In fact, maybe he's even unsure if Hashem will listen to his tefillah. Shema Hashem. He's not even certain that Hashem will hear his tefillah. It's part of David's request and hope and longing. Please, when I cry out loud, have mercy on me and answer me. So he turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with almost no confidence. With a sense of humility and trepidation. Maybe God will not hear my prayers. Maybe Hashem will not hear what I have to say. He wants to seek out HaKadosh Baruch Hu and pray to him in a sincere and devoted way. Next pasuk. Lecha, amardi bi bakshufanai, et panecha Hashem avakesh, in your behalf, my heart says, seek my face, O Lord. I seek your face. Listen how different the language is, everyone. It's a totally different vocabulary. He almost has angered God. It's almost as if God is hiding from him. And almost like this fear that God has absconded somewhere and is forsaking the author. Next pasuk. Al tastir panecha mimeni, al tatbav bavdecha ezrati hayita, al ticheni val ta'azveni. Okay, Yishi, do not hide your face from me. Do not thrust aside your anger, your servant in anger. You have ever been my help. Do not forsake me. Do not abandon me, O God, my deliverer. Once again, there's the sense of, you know, fear. There's the sense of Hashem is hiding from him, and he seeks very much. He seeks very much to, he's desperate. He feels almost isolated. Almost like all of his safety nets have totally disappeared. Ki aviv yumi yazavuni v'shem yasfini, my own parents, so to speak, have totally abandoned me. My father, my mother have forsaken me. Only really, like, who can I only rely on? One, he's desperate. Only Hashem. As parents, right? The most things that are usually there to help you and support you, even my own parents have disappeared. Teach me your ways, Hashem. Lead me on a level path because of my watchful foes. Almost as if the enemies are waiting to attack. They're in the background, about to jump on him, to pounce on him. He hopes that the enemy is going to disappear, but he is definitely unsure and lacks a sense of confidence. As opposed to in that first half, he was completely confident. Let's continue. Al titir b'nefesh tzarai ki kamu vi edei sheker fech chamas. Do not subject me to the will of my foes, for false witnesses and unjust accusers have appeared against me. Again, continuing that theme that everyone is against them. Again, probably also referring to from a personal perspective, everyone that tried to attack and defeat David HaMelech, as we see in Sefer Shmuel. And then Lule Hamanti Leros Betuv Hashem Ve'eretz Chayim. And here, again, very strange type of a pasuk, almost as if that if he were to lose faith in ultimately seeing Hashem, something awful is going to happen to him. Probably he'll be almost totally lost and abandoned. And finally, the last pasuk, which seems to also come out of left field, Kaveh Hashem Chazak. The Yemesi Becha, the Kaveh Hashem, look to the Lord, be strong and of good courage. Oh, look to the Lord. Unclear. Is this continuation of the second one? How does it exactly fit? How does it fit to the first one? Very much unclear. Okay. So I actually think that even though there are two different themes, they're actually very much connected. First of all, there's textual evidence that both A and B, despite having two different themes, are in fact meant to be understood as one paragraph. This is not my idea. This was actually written by a Rav Elchanan Samet, who's a well-known Tanakh teacher in Yeshivat Har Tzion. And he says as follows. He says, take a look at the text. Even though the number of psukim are actually different in part A and part B, Hashem's name appears six times, both in the first part and the second part. Also, the number of words that are repeated in both parts, which are often somewhat uncommon. For example, talking about Ishi and salvation are in both of them. And there's a contradistinction between God, the God of my salvation, not to turn away from, is exact opposite in that second paragraph. So you see many different opposite themes and opposite phrases from that for the first part to the second part. For example, David HaMelech is confident that God will hide him in the fold of his tent, whereas in the second half, he's referring to he begs God not to hide him, not to hide from him at all. And so I do think there's no question that this should be understood as one text, one unit. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what's the message? Why is this read during this time of year, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Tosukot? if we think that we can come on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, and speak to the Ribbono Shel Olam and daven to God without exercising previously our tefillah muscles, it's going to be quite difficult. As they say in the world of exercise, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. That has to do both with the brain and with, of course, a person's muscles. You want to run a marathon tomorrow, this other school is doing some type of bike-a-thon. I will not be participating. And the reason is, I think it's in October, funny time. Maybe you should have it like after the Chagim, maybe you get it to burn off some calories. But you can't just go on a very long marathon or run without preparing your physical muscles. That is true in the world of spirituality as well. It is also true in the world of gratitude, in the world of chesed. We need to do small things every day, whether it's a little bit of tefillah, whether it's a little bit of stuck on charity, so that when there's a moment, we are ready for that challenging moment. The sports athletes, they practice the exact same play 100 times, 1,000 times, so that when the ball is in their hands, they know exactly what to do. It's an automatic response. That is definitely true when it comes to prayer and spiritual matters as well. If we want to enhance our tefillah, we need to talk to God outside of tefillah. Having a conversation with God on a regular Sunday morning at 11 o'clock is going to enhance our tefillah on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Because if we just show up, we haven't exercised our tefillah muscles. We are going to have atrophy. Our prayer muscles are not going to have been used. And so I believe that this tefillah, L'David Hashem Urivi Ishi, is there to assist us in exercising our tefillah, our prayer muscles. What do I mean? We live in a very complicated world. The relationship between God and humankind is very multifaceted. God often seeks humankind, and humankind, of course, wants to seek God. And there are times in the life of the individual and as a nation where God can address humankind, seeking him out and making his presence felt and his imminent power known. And classic examples, of course, standing at Har Sinai, where God literally descended in Har Sinai. There was a cloud and smoke, lightning, of course, the sound of the shofar, which is clearly the idea behind Rosh Hashanah, as Bnei Yisrael stood, the children of Israel stood at the foot of the mountain. Almost like, you know, when you coronate a king. Look at that time, man, right? In the splendor and the glory, with fanfare, pomp and circumstance. But there are times where we have to set out, where a human being needs to go to a quiet place in solitude, where we have to go seek out God. There are no earthquakes, there's no thunder, there's no lightning. We are listening for that small, kol demama daka, that small voice. And often in life, it feels as if God's presence has totally waned. There's this burden upon us. And it is quite difficult to truly see God at the top of that mountain. After Mamad Har Sinai, after the giving of the Torah, the Jewish people, of course, they built Chet Egel. They sinned right away. And we know that Moshe had to go back up and go back on top of the mountain. And we went up afterwards. There's no shofar, there's no smoke, there's no fire, there's no lightning. Moshe went up. I don't even know if there was a divine cloud. Maybe. But Moshe himself had to ascend the mountain to seek out God and his forgiveness. Each half of our Perek of Tehillim, each half of our psalm, I think reflects the station of a person found in either one of these poles of our relationship with God. The first half is sung by someone who is engulfed in God's presence. He hears the shofar, is surrounded by the divine cloud. Nothing can penetrate him. He just has this deep yearning to make that station permanent. But the second half is like a person who feels totally isolated, desperate, far from God, trying to seek him out, terrified of the possibility of failure, and begging God not to turn from him. And maybe, although I've kind of played it out as two different opposing halves, I think ultimately these two poles of the relationship, the overwhelming distance and the overwhelming presence, have a common feature. Both inhere the danger for man of losing his bearings in this, the most important relationship in which we are engaged. You see, the source of our downfall is that sometimes we can't fathom the possibility of being pushed away from God, that we feel isolated and frightened, desperate, and sometimes we give up hope, never believing that our station in life can ever change. David HaMelech wanted to tell us that it is not true. It can change. Look at the last line in our paragraph. Kaveh el Hashem chazak v'yametz libecha. Never lose hope. Look to God, be strong and of courage. Never lose hope. Never lose your expectations, or more importantly, your self-awareness that what the station that you are in now might not last. Never give up hope, falling into the despair of accepting your isolation as permanent. Kaveh el Hashem. Your situation, of course, can change. Rosh Hashanah, Yemei Hadin. It is that moment, of course, we commemorated Har Sinai, hearing that first shofar of Rosh Hashanah. That's the initial stage of Matan Torah, the entire, you know, audiovisual experience. That is the central motif of the day of noise that was heard at Sinai. When Moshe finally descended Har Sinai for the third time, carrying the Luchos Shnios, the second set of tablets, although it makes Moshe almost sound like a pharmacist, but nonetheless, he was assured that God's forgiveness was in Yom Kippur. This is one of the most singular days to commemorate that incredible, important event. And I think realizing on Yom Kippur that we always stand lifnei Hashem, before God, even though, just like Moshe himself, stood alone at Har Sinai to achieve God's forgiveness. And I think this duality exists not just Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, from even the beginning of Elul. We are gripped with dread and maybe fear, judgment, excitement, coronation of the king, coronation of the God of Israel. But of course, there's this idea of fear and joy. But that's normal. That's what it means to be a human behavior. That is life that we are living here on earth. And what we try to do is to seek him out, sometimes even from our depths of loneliness. And we think sometimes that, you know what? The shofar blows on Yom Kippur and that's it. Season's over. High holidays. They're done. They're finished. I got my tickets. I'm finished for the year. Tragically, many Jews believe that. But many Jewish thinkers have proposed a beautiful idea. Because it's not just the 40 days, the apex is on Yom Kippur. But then there's a chuppah. There's that marital canopy that exists on Sukkot. Having encountered a human being and been found, as it were, finally, we get to rejoice together under Hashem's protective cloud, the sukkah. And so, this Perek of Tehillim, and its beauty of its beautiful elegance is, I think, assuring us and longing for us to realize that we have the security of God's presence, the fear of distance from him. We recite it every single day during this time period to remind ourselves that as long as we can reside together and realize that we can invite God in to our homes, to our backyards, when it comes to sukkahs, ensuring that even with the ups and downs and challenges of life, kaveh el Hashem chazak v'mezibecha, kaveh el Hashem. Be strong and have courage and have faith. And together we'll all reside together as one nation, one people, under HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shana tova, ktivah v'chatimah tova to everyone. Thank you.